Welcome to SaaSholes. We are revenue ops with an edge. With decades of making interesting decisions, Jamie, Jason, Marcus, and Pete are dedicated to helping aspiring sales leaders accelerate revenues with our no BS approach to sales leadership strategies and tactics.
Our show is supported by viewers and listeners just like you on patreon.com/SaaSholes. Brent Keltner's Winalytics Revenue Acceleration Playbook Masterclass. In only 8 weeks, help your sales and go-to-market team start to build the mindset and skills needed to succeed in the new buyer environment. Weeks 1 to 3, read the book and learn a new approach through 20 successful company stories. Week 4, all go-to-market team kickoff and receive self-reflection questions and mindset self-assessment. Weeks 5 to 7, collaborative sessions with prospecting, sales, and customer success on the shared journey to a new mindset. Week 8, all go-to-market team presentation and discussion. Winalytics, build the revenue organization you want. Request a free 60-minute growth consultation at winalytics.com. Ask for Brett and say Big Pete sent you.
But it will be, because I can't imagine Google's going to let this one get ahead of them.
Right.
This is an arms race.
Well, it's an arms race, and we have to see who is going to be more open than the others, who's going to have the product-led growth to lead the way.
Yes, and I think that this kind of gives a rewriting of the rules a possibility, because we just don't know what it's capable of. And if you ask it the right questions, it can come up with some spectacularly good answers. So one of my favorite pastimes at the moment is to build the prompt backwards from the job to be done. But then
reverse engineering.
Yeah, reverse engineer from the outcome.
Reverse prompt engineering.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You reverse prompt engineer. And then what you do is you apply disciplines. So, for example, you apply the an overlay of customers, and you describe them and their context.
Yeah. Okay.
And you have it talk to you about their likely reactions and responses. So you build it all out from the customer. And then I like to have panels. So I have an investor panel. So my investor panel is made up of the likes of ICANN and Charlie Munger and Gates and what's his name?
Bezos?
A very famous one, Buffett.
Buffett, okay.
Bezos. And I have them rip my proposition to pieces. And once I've done that, then I start to create my marketing content.
Got it. Carney, we're talking about graphics. Marcus, why don't you pull up what you got on Bing. What is it again? Bing what?
So it's bing.com/create. And it does really well when you type in just a couple of ideas or concepts. So this one was the concept of exploding raw. And then it gave me this one. And then it gave me this one. Sorry, I've already shown you that one. That was the wrong one.
And the reason why this is so amazing is,
wait,
Dolly, you pay $15 and you get credits, and you try to enter in the same information, doesn't even come close.
No.
On Discord, you're using an Imagine prompt and you pay $10 a month and you can get a picture like that, but it takes you 4 or 5 different prompts to get to it and adjustments. And Marcus is blowing my mind literally with what Bing has here. And Bing is Microsoft, right, Marcus? So
yeah,
they're ahead.
And the other thing, if you want real-time data, just go to Google on Bard and start off there and then move to your other platforms, if you're not getting the output that you want. The beauty is you can have real time. It's all
there.
So
I guess if you're a graphics artist, you know, I sent you notes before the show that said what jobs are going to get disrupted and what opportunities will be happening in the future. I think the mid-level graphic artists are going to have a little bit of a rough go, but some of the other jobs.
I think the marketing agencies are really going to have a tough go. I've got a client who took the work from his SEO agency and he prompted GPT. He's got 400% higher close rate, so actual conversion into cash, by using GPT over the agency.
And he owns those assets. Which right. is a huge key. That's something huge right there, is when you're working with an agency, everything that they do, you're renting from them for the most
part. Well, he's 600% ahead of the market.
Well, and hopefully it's not the law of small numbers.
Sorry, say again?
Hopefully it's not the law of small numbers.
I don't think it is, because I see lots of people applying this stuff well, but they are, you know, little pinpricks of light in a swamp of darkness. Because most people are butchering this stuff, and it's horrifying.
Well, Financial Times came out with a pretty nifty article. AI executives warn its threat to humanity rivals pandemics and nuclear war. And they talk about how AI is going to affect things. And I'm sure we've seen all the different headlines out there. But, you know, it's talking about job loss. And when you have, new technology, you're always going to have job loss. So the key is to know what's going and what's coming. So I thought we would spend the show giving an update on the jobs that are leaving, the jobs that are coming, and then also talk about what are the new C-level jobs that will be coming up, because we love all these fancy acronyms. Does that sound like a plan, gentlemen?
Absolutely.
So should we do the negative first, the positive first? Should we say the jobs that are leaving? SaaS companies.
They will negatively impact.
Negatively, yes, negatively. Okay. Data entry clerks. One, telemarketers and customer service reps, manufacturing workers, retail cashiers, bookkeepers, five, transportation delivery jobs, warehouse workers, fast food workers, nine, administrative assistants, 10, construction workers. And I'm like, how does that work? So they're saying some of the more routine tasks in construction, like bricklaying or concrete pouring, are starting to be automated.
Well, a lot of those are being replaced, if we're being honest, by digital printing. Amazon has already moved into that space. They've been building and prototyping digital bathrooms, which are printed as complete units and then shipped off to hotels. And they've been doing that for years. So with the advent of AI, the potential to now design on the hoof and then build samples and prototypes at ultra low cost. And there have been a bunch of exercises around building sustainable developments. Now, there's still very early days, but in China, they're talking about building tower blocks out of this stuff. Now, it'll be a while, but it's coming, I would have thought. I can't see any reason why it wouldn't.
Well, construction, what I'm seeing is, and I'll look to our buddy Elon Musk, because, he had three or four big houses at one time, and they said, hell with it, sold them all, was staying on his friend's sofa, and then he got a foldable home. So he started getting foldable homes. The thing about foldable homes is you just need a crane or something to pick them up, unfold, and put them on a place. But the key is why they're so efficient is you don't need a special permit, like a wide load to transport them down the highway. They're 8 foot across or whatever it is. So you just have these, you get a concrete slab and you put these sectional pieces up and unfold and you're done. So like Marcus, you're saying, you can just go in and say, you know, I would like to have this, this, and this. Okay, great. 3D print, whatever it is, and then bam. So construction.
You guys think it seems so easy. There's also plumbing.
Unless
you're living in an outhouse, Pete.
Well, like just we said, the negative is, why do you need to put up studs and drywall? But there are, there could be jobs of, and it might be automated, where you need to plumb and you need to put electricity into an area, depending how far off you are.
Customizations. No one, you know, people are going to want to customize it to their own nature. So.
I mean, if we're really thinking ahead.
Yeah.
You know, about 4 months ago, they landed that rocket or that missile on the asteroid. You remember?
What movie was that?
It wasn't. Yeah. It was real. About 4 months ago, it was all over the news. And they managed to hit it from, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles away at pace. And that wasn't really about proving the engineering. That was preparing the way for mining asteroids. Think right. about what that means. The ubiquity of supply of materials that the universe provides. Whoever can crack that? And that's the race that we're really trying to deal with. There is actually a very strong argument that World War III has already started between China and America in space.
Yeah. And then there's revenue operations.
And then there's revenue operations. But the reality is, this stuff is going on in the background.
Okay? Yeah.
And that's the direction the bigger thinkers are heading. And that's where everyone else will follow eventually. Musk has created, whatever you think of him, he created a couple of pretty impressive markets in the same way that Jobs did. They've come in, they've disrupted. But this is no different in terms of the way human beings are reacting to it, to the spinning Jenny. You know, we had the Luddites come out and break those things and destroy factories and burn things to the ground because we fear the change. And what we really fear is the uncertainty. So in terms of RevOps, I've been really thinking deep about this. And it strikes me that what we need to do is we need to make sure that RevOps focuses on creating the conditions so the human beings who actually have to deal with the data, execute the result, and bring in the money actually want to be there and can produce the outcome that you're looking for. And this is where the AI really comes into its own. It's in us helping to redesign the revenue operations function and everyone who touches the customer. That's my take on this. I think it's a brilliant opportunity.
Carney, you're closer to finance than I am, even though you say you're not a finance guy. What do you think about bookkeepers and accountants? Many routine accounting tasks can be accountants.
Hold on. You just unintentionally insulted the accounting profession. There's bookkeepers and there's accountants. Bookkeepers are following rules and are policy keepers. Accountants are trying to analyze the data and figure out where can they do that. There's a big difference. An accounts payable clerk is a bookkeeper. Could that be automated by ChatGPT? 100%. Could accountants, a lot of accounting work, be automated by AccountGPT or, you know, ChatGPT? Or AI? It can. And that's helpful because there's a shortage of accountants out there. One, because it's a absolutely boring career.
I hate accountants.
Two, it's a five-year degree now. It's not a four-year degree. So it limits it. So if you look at most companies, there's a shortage of accountants working in the accounting department that are overseeing a lot of the processes by people that aren't accountants doing the bookkeeping. So this will help a lot.
If you own a business, it's almost like you have to be a prompt engineer to ask the accountant the right question to get the answer that you need. That's why I hope. Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. When you prompt the GPT, you should be speaking to it as if you're dealing with a new employee and you're giving them context and educating them. in order that they can go away and do the research. But you know, they've got the horsepower that you couldn't even dream of. I mean, I put together a 120-day onboarding plan for a pal of mine who's just got a new job. And it took me four, maybe five prompts to have all 120 days mapped out with what he needs to know, by when he needs to know it, where he can find it, how it will be measured, the consequences of not performing and achieving that outcome, and how it will be escalated. And for him to be able to take that on day one to his manager and say, I've been thinking about my first 120 days, boss. Can you help me fill in the gaps?
What about a sales admin?
Anyone, it doesn't make any difference.
Like, why would you need a sales admin? I remember back in the day, you would farm this stuff out. Hey, schedule this, book this event, and manage a calendar.
Yeah, I think admins in general, executive. I need an executive admin. I should look at artificial intelligence.
Okay, why? Why do you need an executive admin, Bernie?
But most,
I need one because I am overscheduled, and I need someone to sort of help me.
Wait a minute. Do you have an online scheduling system?
Pete, there are constant requirements.
Overrides?
There's constant requirements of my time. And I am not good at being succinct. And therefore, I fall behind on meetings a lot because I can't seem to ever end a meeting on time when I get invited.
See, it's a catch-22 again, Carney, because if you build such a good system because you're a good leader, they don't need you anymore, then we'll edit that out in post. But but seriously, the admins, I can't see why you would need.
Well, but okay. What are they just adapt? We still need administration. And the idea of me trying to program workflows into any form of AI, even telling it what to do, is just insane. Because my mind doesn't work like that. I need other people to do that. And that's what virtual assistants are doing. But VAs are adapting now. They're now becoming significantly more than just PAs. They are marketers. They're rev ops. They're tech stack builders. They're growth consultants. They're database builders and cleansers. They do all of that stuff. And that a lot of it is automated, but you need to have a liaison at this stage because the interface isn't there yet. And until the interfaces are there, you need a human being as the go-between.
I'm going back in time to when we had a big head count. We're talking 800 people or so. So an admin can handle a certain amount of groups, back then. So you have, let's say, four or five admins, and then you would have one head admin. And I think the people that are going to have the problems are the three or four lower level admins, but the chief admin can be scaled now where they don't need that lower head count. I think that's how it would work. Because like you say, you need somebody's got to have the specific knowledge of what the admin work is in order to train it.
Yes, Sam. Sorry, Jamie, you go first.
Well, what I was going to say is what AI is going to help us do across the board is become more, the more people that lean into it, and it'll happen over a five-year time frame, the more productive everyone will be. And we need that. There is a strain, especially in the U.S. labor market. We're in a recession. I don't care what anyone says. We've been in a recession for over a year. And yet our unemployment rate is at 3.5% or 4%, which is ridiculous. Full unemployment is at 5%. Why is that? It's because during COVID, we had people exit the labor force and never come back. They said, hey, we're done. We're done with dealing with this. I don't want to deal with this anymore. I'm done. And so therefore, our labor force has gone down. Our H-1B, our stance on H-1 visas has limited the amount of people that can come in here. And we limit the skill sets that are out there for people to, we do not have the right skill sets to fill the jobs that constantly go unfilled in the US today. What's gonna happen with all of this AI? It's gonna make everyone more productive so that we can do more with less, but essentially there is such a strain on every person that's in the US that's in a valuable position. They're going to have to use this account or this this AI to help them scale themselves and scale other people within their organization.
Well, I'm going to build on that because this is really important. I think we've had the confluence of lockdown and the pandemic, which has driven digitization forward 10 years. Jump-started that. It also forced people to learn how to work remotely and that the world is a very small place now. And the fact that you don't have full employment, you do have full employment at the moment.
Full employment is 5% in the US.
And right, and you're beyond that. So what it also means is you can now recruit from the entire global market. It's forced us to learn how to cooperate. Now, most people who are from a command and control mentality have not adapted well to that. So they're trying to drag people kicking and screaming back to the office. Now, let's be honest, how many of you really want to go back to an office where you're going to be peered over and micromanaged? If we can create the conditions where individuals, and today I'm working with individuals who can in one day produce 120 times more output, quality output, than an average person without the same small technology stack and nouse. 120 times. It's just stunning. I mean, they're having 20 conversations an hour with people who are on clean lists with strong hypothesis that gets them meetings. And there's some, 14 out of 20 will say yes.
All right, we talked about the negative. Let's get some clickbait going here. Let's talk about the positives, the jobs of the future that people should start to be looking at now. Because we've been talking about AI for a while now. It's a land grab out there. And if you want to get a new gig, here's 10 jobs you may want to look at. Are you guys ready? AI
ethicist, yes, absolutely.
Ethicist, as AI plays a more significant role in society, there'll be a need for professionals who can help guide its ethical use. Do you have thoughts, gentlemen?
Absolutely. I think that's really critical. And government will not keep up with the pace of technology. So what we need is a broad cross-section of thinkers to look at the questions we should be asking in the same way that what this period offers us is a chance to look root and branch at the way our businesses operate and the functions of the business. Because as Jamie said, we are suffering from labor shortages and we have to do more with less and with fewer people. So now we have to rethink what are the different functions that we need to have in place in order to execute the job to be done? And we've got to work backwards from that. And this is where I think most people are getting it wrong, because they're trying to build from where they came from instead of look ahead and think, okay, so in 3 years' time, what is the business we are trying to create? For that to be possible, what functions need to be in place? Do we have the people to fill those functions? What processes are required to get them there? How will they be measured? And all of that stuff needs to be built first.
Who does this person report to? Is this like the chief technology officer? Because it's privacy, right?
Well, I think this is really a strategy call, and it requires people who are at the sharp end to be involved in building this. You know, if you're a leader, I would be speaking to your people and finding out what the job really is, not the one you sold them. You know, how many people have gone into a job and it bears no relation to anything that they were sold at the interview? Because that's pretty common.
Well, who's responsible for ethics at a company, especially with data, Carney?
Well, is this a company thing or is this a policy thing?
I think it's policy. I what we're tr- I am trying to give out 10 jobs that are going to be coming up.
I think a majority of this is policy, which is going to get very hairy very quick.
Well, the title is Ethicist. Did I say that right?
Yep.
Ethicist. Okay. Yeah, no, as opposed to Ethicist.
Where is a no-go for AI is really the way I read that or heard that, is like, what should AI do and what shouldn't they do? And then the problem is going to be is a cost benefit thing, right? Would I love AI to be deployed at my DMV so that I can go get a new license within seconds and not have to watch five people hand paper to each other and wait 3 hours to get that done? Yeah. But guess what? The policy is going to be like, we can't do that because that would eliminate, you know, one of the largest functions of the largest employer in the U.S.
The title is Ethicist. Who is this person going to report to?
Well, I think ultimately the chief executive should be accountable. And the people responsible for the execution are going to be finance, because how they measure and how they compensate will drive the behavior. I think HR should absolutely have a role in this, because they're meant to be part of the execution team for the board's vision. I think operations absolutely has to be involved, and customer success has to be involved. And sales, you can't not involve all of these people in the discussion. The person who will ultimately be, whose head will be on the block for it, is the person who is responsible for the behavior of everyone in the organization.
Here, I'll ask an easier question, guys, because you're not giving me an answer. Who handles privacy concerns at a company? Is it legal?
Legal, CTO. We have a company secretary function that might cover it over here.
Karnak?
CIO, CTO.
Okay, thank you. AI trainers, that's going to be a big one, which is basically starting with a question and getting a wrong answer and then correcting the question so you get a less worse answer. Is that what an AI trainer is?
Don't know. I think an AI trainer will become a machine, because it can do it probably a lot more effectively once you give it the data set. Then why do you need a human being to do it?
Well, I think you need a human being to oversee it.
To start with, yeah.
Yeah, to start.
Refining data that AI learns from, because there has to be one input that goes in there that matches. If you ask each C-level at the company, you know, the question, it has to be the same answer going out, I guess. Oh, the third one is AI explainability specialists. What the hell is that? As AI decisions become more complex, it may be necessary to have experts who can interpret and explain the model's outcomes, especially in critical areas like healthcare or criminal justice. So,
in all honesty, probably beyond the scope of any of us to really understand.
Yeah. We'll go past that one unless
we're only marketing and sales.
AI interaction designers, interfaces, interactions between humans and AI.
Well, you only have to look at how shitty they are at the moment, but that's a design role. That's designers shifting into that. A lot of the fury around it, I think, is what comes along with new technology. I remember when the internet arrived and all the hype, and we were expecting the high street to disappear. It took another 20 years before they managed to kill themselves off. You know, we don't learn quickly. And I think what happens is people adapt, and there will absolutely be losers. There's no question. But there will also be winners. I mean, our grandchildren will probably be asteroid miners. They'll be out in space mining gold and platinum and titanium and weird rare earth metals.
Then we flooded the system and the value goes down.
Who knows? I mean, it's going to be a brave new world. And what we need to do is not think about it through the lens of where we've come from, but what are the conditions we want to create in the future? And for that to be possible, what functions do we need to have in place? And then build jobs from there.
Yeah. Look, I'm looking in the crystal ball, which tomorrow it'll be cracked. So
yep.
I got to talk quickly. But this is the latest thing that's popping up. So AI maintenance and support. So what's different than managing servers now or the chips? Right. It's just up. There's nothing too crazy about that, right?
No.
Okay. Data privacy managers. How is that different from an AI ethicist? These guys will be crucial to ensure compliance with regulations and maintain public's trust. This is a pain in the ass in Europe, right? What's that thing you have to do in Europe?
GDPR.
Yeah. You see anything? Europe's will get are more strict than here in the States. What do you think they'll get on with AI, Marcus?
Well, last I heard, the Italians had outlawed ChatGPT, which was pretty interesting. I may have misheard, but I'm pretty sure that's right. And I think that what will happen is there will be a typical overreaction, and then there'll be pushback, and they'll overreact the other way, and it'll sort of bounce along. And I think what the founders need to do is work on a code of conduct and start leading the way, because the problem is that when the big companies get hold of or have this technology, they're going to be pushing the lobbyists to drive things that work in their favor. This is an opportunity, I believe, for us to reset and to democratize the use of these technologies. They become accessible to everybody. I mean, $15-$20 a month, you can get access to the sum total of human knowledge. You can spin it through some incredible tech, and it can spit out some fantastic output that you cannot do otherwise. Now, that wasn't available even 6 months ago for most of us. This is game changing. So let's take advantage of it and stop faffing around thinking in the old ways and start thinking, what do we want to create? If I want to create a really effective, sustainable business with the fewest in number of employees who are gainfully employed, doing work they love, that they consider to be meaningful and important for customers who love them and bring their wealthy friends, if I want to build that business, how do I do that?
Well, I'm giving you the top 10 list of these jobs of the future, and the way this thing is going to go, these top 10 will probably turn into the top three, and there'll be another seven, you know, coming in. Because I'll just read the rest of these. AI-based healthcare providers, so doctors.
Yeah.
You know.
That's definitely on the up, without question. You're already seeing telemedicine and the ability to do remote operations. Having a supervisor supervising brain surgery with a novice and the AI being guided by the professor remotely. It's just stunning.
Well, I mean, you can get a knee replacement with a robot, so I don't want to mess with the head just yet. AI application specialist, that sounds like IT to me.
Well, again, a lot of marketing agencies are moving into that space. Yeah. I had a conversation only this morning with a guy who specializes in this, and the stuff he's doing, breathtaking.
And then number 10, personalized learning facilitators and coaches, which I guess is us.
Yeah.
More personalized education, need for human facilitators to guide learners in maximizing this new experience, okay? So the next thing is, what are the new C-level positions that are going to be coming out there? There's already a chief data officer, Carney, is that true?
Yep.
That's been around for a while.
Right? Especially the bigger companies, right? Chief privacy officer? That's been around, or is that legal?
Well, is it legal or is it marketing?
This role may become more prevalent as companies recognize the value of their data. The CDO will be responsible for data governance, privacy, quality control, and turning data into actionable insights with the help of AI.
Well, I think the chief data officer may well be a future pathway to the CEO. I think the chief of channel, chief of data, both have a pathway to the CEO role if they develop the savvy of sales and finance. They have to develop that.
Are you ready for this one? CAIO, Chief Artificial Intelligence Officer. Is that going to be you? Come on, Carney. You're a CIO.
Why do we have to create C-level for everything these days? You know, like...
like Chief Revenue Officer?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, guys, these are called functions of a company. Hey, there's artificial intelligence. Do we really need a C-level artificial intelligence officer? It just makes no sense to me.
Well, so if there's a chief artificial intelligence officer, do all these jobs go underneath him?
Yeah.
Her.
Sooner or later, you got too many chiefs, right? Not enough Indians.
How many chiefs should you have? Chief privacy officer. I know bigger companies have it.
I doubt they have a data and a privacy, unless they're huge.
Yeah. Those are usually. Chief robotics officer, CRO.
I would imagine that is
a robotics company, automation, manufacturing, cars, that type of stuff, I'm guessing.
Unless it's automation robots.
Yeah.
Which, in terms of software and workflows, process, okay. That kind of thing.
All right, chief customer officer, that's already out there, right? Yeah. What's more common, chief revenue officer or chief customer officer?
Chief revenue, because most of them are internally focused and selfish.
Okay.
And the ones who have a chief customer officer probably have that as lip service. I'd love to meet some. If any are listening and want to come on the pod, who are genuinely customer focused, we'd love to talk to you.
So would chief customer officer be marketing then?
I think CS. I think the CS functions.
Customer service? Underrated. Okay.
I think the smart salespeople in my book are going to move into partnering and they're going to move on to the customer side. Because direct, for God's sake, who the hell wants to deal with a vendor when you've got 800 different applications within your business? Yeah, banks are running 800 to 1,000 different apps, and they might have 600 different vendors. So working with partners is going to become critical because the partners work with multiple different technologies, and they're weaving together components of the business. And then the good partners are working together. That's how organizations are going to be operating in the future, in my head. I can't see how you can be dealing with all these different vendors without it turning into an absolute stinker for procurement, for finance, for operations, and for anyone who wants to make a change. You need to work through partners. And you've got to have brilliant control and understanding of your data, but you need to understand the small data. People get it wrong. They focus on the big data, but it's a small data. That's where the money is.
So any of these companies, I mean, we're dealing with SaaS and everybody's getting in a bunch over, you know, the carbon footprint. They're talking about a chief sustainability officer.
Yep.
ESG would you do that, should be.
Well, James, tell me this. How do you turn ESG into a profit center?
How do I turn what into a profit center?
The ESG stuff, what's it? Sustainability, governance, and what the E stands for, can't remember off the top of my head.
Environmental.
Excellent. There you go. I knew it would come to me. Benjamin, don't laugh.
You don't turn that into a profit center.
Right. Why not?
Sell the credits in the States.
Right. But why would you not turn being hyper compliant and utterly trustworthy into an asset? Why wouldn't you turn your environmental credentials into an attractor for your competitors' customers? Why wouldn't you deal with your sustainability in terms of creating long-term sustainability with your production, your supply chain, and turn all of those into assets?
Because people, those are nice to have. People don't buy based. Yeah, I'm not going to buy a crappy product that has that's sustainable. I'm going to buy the best product and hope they're sustainable.
Okay, so ask a better question. Okay. How do we turn those into profit centers and maintain our quality and performance?
Well, I mean, that obviously, if you do that, you're great. I mean, I think, the problem always when it comes to environmental compliance
is China. They don't give a shit. We can tighten everything that we want.
You can do as great as you can, and then all of a sudden it becomes too expensive. And guess what? The buyers go to China.
Well, they do.
The buyers go to governments that don't care. And so, like, the number one competitive advantage that people outside the U.S. That are producing things outside the U.S. is labor costs are so much cheaper somewhere else. So, I mean, everyone's outsourcing to different countries. Why? Because labor costs are cheaper. So the more the U.S., you know,
gets where I was better. Going with it, unless you got it. Last I heard, China's pretty big. And anybody been to Hong Kong lately?
No.
Hold your breath. I mean, really, it is that bad. We can tweak all that we want over here, and all the crap that they're putting out, it's a drop in the ocean. Doesn't mean you shouldn't try, but I think we're getting into politics on that one. So,
well, I don't think we are. I think we're getting into marketing. I think there are a lot of people who actually give a damn. And if you look at people like BlackRock, they've said that if you don't have an ESG policy, don't even bother talking to us because we ain't coming. You're not getting a cent from us. So there is a shift, and we need to work within the constraints of the context in which we operate and start asking better questions. The most obvious question is there a better way? And inevitably there is. Okay, so what's the future that we want to create? And we, I think, as a business community, have to decide what actually matters to us and then club together with other people who share that purpose, that mission, those values, and try and make this effect this change ourselves. Because let's be honest, if we're waiting for government to do it, there's no way they can keep up with the speed with which AI and technology is changing. And also, social change. They're not asking the right questions. And I think we have to take those questions to them because they're stuck. They're stuck with the political system, the lobbying system, vested interests. And we have to bring stuff to them that they cannot refute because otherwise it's just never going to happen. But maybe I'm just being wildly naive and optimistic.
You're being naive and optimistic. So we talked about the sea levels. You know what? Let's go to the
Marcus, wasn't it?
Let's go to the B levels. You know, the boards. Conceptually, I'm having a hard time figuring out why do you need these people to meet four times a year to give their thoughts on what is going on? Shouldn't there be scenarios presented and they could meet once a year and say this is what we're going to do, and then maybe override it if something like a 100-year flood comes in?
Well, because why do we want to reduce the amount of human contact between the people who make decisions?
Well, because these people that are making decisions, they're not spending a lot of time. They're just looking at the data, right?
Ah, right. Okay. So what we really want is for them to be fit for purpose. So a better question, I think, is how do we create boards that are fit for purpose for the future?
So how do we do that?
I don't know, because you just...
you sit these people in a room. They make pretty good money, a few hundred grand for their time. And they're being presented with data and they're giving their opinions, not their opinions, they're saying this is what to do. And again, I'm trying to, maybe I'm being too simple with it, but I don't know how many different scenarios that could come into play. But the reason why this wouldn't work is it's hard to say when to add headcount. It's easy to say when to get rid of headcount. And you can't narrow down these people based on market conditions or profit margins. It's just like, oh, wow, let's do a layoff, see what the numbers are. Oh, do another layoff.
Well, I agree that that's the way things are. I disagree that you can't predict when you're going to need headcount. If you have a really good, robust plan and you have three or four lines of pursuit that the business has identified and as the bets that you're going to place and that will take the business to where you want to go. The right people are in charge of leading those charges, and you work in short sprints so that you're checking to make sure that you're advancing and you're moving towards the goal or the job to be done. Then all of that stuff absolutely can be predicted and planned. And in fact, it's a necessary part of that planning process, because if you know what business you're going to become in 3 years' time, you need to know what functions you're going to need 3 years ahead, 2.5 years, 2 years, 1 year, and so on. And then you're going to need to know when you're going to have the money to pay for them. And then you're going to have to start building the bench. And my clients are building the bench anything up to 6 to 36 months ahead of when they need to recruit someone, so that they've got seven candidates lined up, all of whom can do the job and want the job and are ready to accept an offer if their circumstance suits them.
Carney, do I have my head in the clouds, like with the boards? You know, it's a hard thing for you to answer, I understand, but you know, even these board people have to look at their position to see how it's changing. You have to talk about it to figure out, hey, why do we want to react? Why can't we be ahead of it? Look, there's two ways a business can go, up or down, or maybe three, sideways. But what do we want to do if sales is this? What do we want to do? Are there just too many scenarios that we can't just say, how do we want to act at this time of the year?
All right, so there's a couple of things with boards, right? One, why are you on a board? Because you either have invested in the company, or you have, if you get invited to a board, you have the experience that you can draw on. The other thing is, outside of these huge companies, and even the huge companies, there's a limited amount of resources. So board members and executive levels are placing bets on, especially when you haven't gotten to that flywheel effect if you're in a startup, they're placing bets on, where do you think we can win? We can win in these verticals. We can win at this level. And they're betting on that. Now, when they
bet, how do we know when we're winning?
They obviously results, renewal and
I know, but you have to give objective data.
You've got to remember, they're guessing, especially in a lot of these cases, they're guessing. And so how do you guess with that? You can't look at historical trends, because you're trying to break into a new
new vertical. But you can't say, you know what, the trend is 10% off. How do I want to react to the trend?
Well, you can react, but I'm saying on the initial thing, what went wrong? There are certain things that went wrong. Maybe it's sales execution. Maybe it's marketing execution. Maybe it's a combination of both. Maybe it's product execution. Maybe it's product market fit. Maybe it's a combination of all three or four of those things. It's much more complicated than you think, and AI is going to be there as a co-pilot through a lot of these decisions, but it's not going to
ultimately. How many levers? All right, it's Wizard of Oz, and you go behind the curtain, and there's a bunch of dials. How many different dials is there to turn that you have to sit with these people? I get if your money's invested in it, you want to be at the table. But if you're the one that's getting 10,000 shares of stock to show up at this meeting and give their thoughts, why do we need those people anymore?
sounding board. When do you pivot? Meaning, oh, it's not working. Is it not working because we're impatient, or do we need to pivot? What are we doing wrong from an execution standpoint? Because it's not clear. So you need a sounding board in a lot of these cases. That's why you're calling on a lot of these people at the board level to sort of sit there and say, I need you to help decipher.
I need your experience because you've seen scenarios that I haven't seen before, and you've made mistakes. If you can record those mistakes and harness them somewhere,
even
is that
then,
not possible?
Black and white. Board experience is the island of gray that AI is not going to be able to ever attach, because there are so many complicated answers to a business problem, marketing conditions, policy conditions.
I'll give you a scenario. Okay. You have somebody that's on a PIP, okay? They're an up and down employee. They'll make their number and then they won't make their number. You put them on a PIP and then they'll make their number again. Okay. And they'll miss the number by 1 point. You're like, oh, we'll subjectively override our system to keep this person on board versus artificial intelligence say, let's get somebody else to come in here. Is that where the human element kind of screws this up? Or is that too cold, being too cold-hearted?
Yeah, but you were talking board. Now you went down to the individual level.
Well, it's also like a board saying, when do you add headcount? Or saying, you know, what results am I looking for? And if I don't get it, what do I want to look at next? When do I want to get rid of the CEO?
Yeah, but I don't think AI is going to help with that. I don't think AI can help with that.
I think we need to start looking at AI as a creative partner. I think, you know, boards should be using it in order to help them look around corners and to try and scenario plan. The technology is now out there to be able, for example, to map any changes within your own operation and see what other moving parts are going to be impacted. These are the kind of decisions that boards are going to be making in terms of policy process. They should be using it to inform them, because at the moment they're working off largely spreadsheets and limited sets of data. And then they're making really important decisions without having all of that background.
And here's the number one decision that the board screw up, guys, is they say, you got to grow by this amount. Okay. Right. You just have to. Why? Well, we looked at this spreadsheet or what. Sometimes they'll add a couple points just because you might miss. Right.
Yep.
So would AI do that? Because it's not likely.
But and then you put how you program the prompt.
Yeah.
But again, I think what we have to do is we've got to start standing up to them and saying for a second, well, hang on. If you're going to increase our target by 100% or whatever ludicrous number you've decided to throw our way, show me the evidence based on the territory and our CRM data. Precisely. Well, the AI can give the managers and the leaders the insight that they need to prove that it's impossible. If you tell me to go out and find another 30% in that territory, it just ain't there. So your numbers are out, and whatever you're forecasting to the rest of your investors, it's going to be wrong. So let's go back and revisit, and we can use this to challenge. I've got a client who's done this. In fact, he's managed to get a massive promotion off the back of doing it, because we use the AI to build the business case and then frame it in the language of the board. And he's now got a 2-year moratorium to build a new business function because it's a big organization and they're willing to invest 2 years to get this right.
We're placing bets on the future. So we know we're wrong. You know, we're taking guesses. This thing is being developed as we speak, and it is fun to make these guesses and what we think is going to happen. Marcus, you know, Kalki, Jamie.
One thing to add there is the Google CEO said over the weekend in the Wall Street Journal. I don't know if you guys read that at all.
But, did not tell me. Tell us.
He said that they feel they're going to lose the AI race. And not to
they already did.
Well, if you look at the competitors like Microsoft and all of that, Google will beat them because Google's sitting on the most data, right? Bottom line, Google has been a data company.
So for say Elon Musk is
20 years. Why did the Google CEO said they're going to lose the AI front? Open source, because open source is beating everybody. And that's where it becomes even scarier in terms of the marketplace and where we're headed in the future, is that there is going to be so many competitors in this AI space, all from open source, that are going to create their own companies and provide people with the keys to the future that we're not
going to be even easier though, Jamie, because lay people in the next few months, lay people will be able to build programs and apps with no programming experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At the moment, most of the technology has been built by engineers, which is why I don't think most of it is fit for purpose. It's not built by salespeople. It's not built by people who are on the shitty end of the stick. And that's where I think there's going to be a big opportunity. And that's why I think you're absolutely right. The open source community is going to explode. And then we're going to start looking at people collaborating and start link chaining, their different types of technology. There's one I came across called Whimsical, whimsical.ai, I think it is. And it's basically Miro with AI. So I can just paste in a document and then have it create a mind map. And then it can create post-its. And then I can do all of that stuff. And then I can press the AI button, and it spits out more output on the basis of my input.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wow.
I think the future of AI is it's a co-pilot in everything that you do.
Yeah.
They'll start being integrated in everything you do, especially when we get back to the revenue side, sales ops. I've said this before, RevOps. I think AI is going to be living with your conversational intelligence in your email and basically queuing you up and telling you what to say at the what time based on what your company wants you to say and give you recommendations along the way the entire time, rather than you having to go to another interface and ask it questions. It's just going to live there while you're emailing and say, hey, you should probably talk about this functionality or this product. Oh, this is a great conversation. You should be doing this. Conversational intelligence is recording what you're saying, spitting that out and telling you exactly what the company wants you to say. Doesn't mean you have to follow it. Just means that's what the company is going to start enabling you on that. And I think it's going to be not just in sales. Obviously, I've got the RevOps mindset on, but it's going to live in terms of everything that you do. I remember Pete, we had at one of our companies, Colin Powell, was a speaker at one of our kickoffs that we had. And he said, the greatest invention to help me survive tough negotiations was Google. Because while he's negotiating, he would have Google up on his computer and they would say blah, 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 and try to like challenge his authority or his ability, his credibility. And he would immediately Google whatever they said and would just spit back, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. And yet he would have no clue. He was just living off of Google. Guess what? All these people that are great BSers are going to be living in AI all day long.
Pete could be a management consultant.
Mm-hmm. Those consultants say ZS is okay, but the rest of them, I don't know. They're going to have some issues. Hey, Marcus Kalki, thank you so much for coming on the SaaS podcast. It's nice to squeeze that knowledge out of your brain.
That's not my
All right. Take care, Marcus.
Our show is supported by viewers and listeners just like you on patreon.com/sassholes. Brent Keltner's Winalytics Revenue Acceleration Playbook Masterclass. In only 8 weeks, help your sales and go-to-market team start to build the mindset and skills needed to succeed in the new buyer environment. Weeks 1 and 3, read the book and learn a new approach through 20 successful company stories. Week 4, all go-to-market team kick off and receive self-reflection questions and mindset self-assessment. Weeks 5 to 7, collaborative sessions with prospecting, sales, and customer success on the shared journey to a new mindset. Week 8, all go-to-market team presentation and discussion. Winalytics, build the revenue organization you want. Request a free 60-minute growth consultation at winalytics.com. Ask for Brent and say Big Pete sent you.